Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Hello, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for what's going to be a super fun episode. I have a guest on today that I've wanted to chat with for a long time, someone that I've interacted with numerous times online. I'm a big fan of his. I consider him an online friend, a guy I look forward to hopefully meeting someday in person in the future. My guest on today's episode is the Lucha Libre guy, Roy Lucher. And of course, we talk all about Lucha Libre, as well as tape trading and collecting action figures and much more. That is coming up soon. I just want to throw in a reminder. My Dave Dynasty Facebook account was hacked and suspended. I'm not sure when or even if I will ever get it back. I'm trying, but you know how that works. So in the meantime, I have created a Facebook page to use. So go and search for Nostalgic Dave Dynasty on Facebook. Look under the pages and you'll see me. And please like that page. And of course, as I've always said, the best and the primary way to keep up with me is by following me on X at The Dave Dynasty. So there you have it. That's the latest non-happenings in the social media world for me. So take it for what you will. So let's take a break. And like I said, when we come back, we'll have that interview with our guest, Roy Lucher. So stick around.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to The Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network? Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend Ike, and we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number 2, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider. All right, and welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by a very special guest, Roy Lucier. Roy, how are you?
I'm doing amazing. How about you?
I'm doing good. You know, I'm glad to be talking to you because you and I have interacted quite a bit online and this and that here and there, and you know, on Twitter and different things every once in a while. But it's actually good to be talking to you finally.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I'm surprised we haven't met up somewhere before. You live in the Midwest, don't you?
Well, right now I'm in North Carolina. I'm originally from the Midwest, but the last 4 years I've lived in North Carolina. So I'm on the
off. You didn't go to the gathering last year?
No, I didn't. I had something going on. It seems like I always have a conflict, but nah, I need to.
So last year, I got the Abdullah the Butcher Popey figure, and I saw he was at the gathering. I have a niece that at the time I'd never met before, so I kind of arranged it to go to the gathering and meet my niece. Sadly, Abdullah the Butcher dropped out of the gathering, but lucky enough, Ranger Ross is a close friend of mine, and he's close friends with Abdullah. So I said, dude, can you get this figure signed? So I sent it to Ranger Ross. Abby signed it. He sent it back. And I still ended up going to the gathering, which was a blast, by the way. I really recommend it to anyone who's out there.
Yeah. I don't know why I haven't made it. It's just a couple hours from me. And I always have a conflict. But I mean to. I need to. But let's dive in. You obviously you grew up. You still live in California.
Yes.
How did pro wrestling hook you?
So I remember watching when I was a kid. You know, I was like 7 years old and flipping through the channels, and I saw it was like Sergeant Slaughter doing the Cobra Clutch Challenge of like jobbers or whatever, and then Pat Patterson, I think he was the announcer at the time, came in and offered to get the Cobra Clutch on him, and he wouldn't release the hold, and it, you know, got a little crazy. That was my first memory of it, but I didn't know. I was 7. I didn't know it was a weekly show. I didn't know all that stuff. But when I was 9 years old, I was flipping through my dad's satellite dish, and we had the MSG network, and I actually remember watching Hogan beat the Sheik live for the title. So at that point, the cool thing about those old MSG shows is after intermission or leading up to the main event, they would actually get on the mic and Howard Finkel would say the exact date of the next show and what the big matches were on the show.
Yep.
So I caught that. I remembered the date, and then those shows were live. So I would actually turn it on live and watch the MSG shows. And then I knew Saturday at, I was living in Anaheim at the time, so I got the Los Angeles channels. We got like Superstars. We got there was a UHF channel. They got World Class. I mean, I started flipping through and learning more and more what to watch. So from 84 on, I was just hooked, and that was my life.
Yeah, I think you and I are. I think we're pretty close, same age. I figure a lot of our experiences are kind of the same. That's kind of with me. I mean, I got started with watching my grandma watched. My grandma was a fan. And I got started with her.
My grandfather was a wrestling fan. I have uncles that were wrestling fans. My first ever show that I went to at the Anaheim Convention Center in 86, I went with my dad and my uncle. So they were fans, but I guess I was just so rambunctious that, you know, from then on, they just dropped me off.
Yeah. My first show, I don't really remember a whole lot about it, was my grandma taking me. She lived in this little town in Indiana called Enberg. You know, it's just a little bitty town. But Dick the Bruiser did a spot show at the high school gym there. And I think I was 7 or 8. And I don't remember a whole lot about it, but we went to that. And that was my first live show. But it was just, I remember the feel, right? The being at this thing and thinking, oh, this is something. And just being hooked. And it kind of like, I had that satellite experience too, because we had one of those
satellite. We had whatever it was, 10-foot satellite dishes in the backyard that would,
yeah,
that would and move.
It was amazing. I can still remember the channels to this day. There was like G1 and each G whatever, M1, M2, G1, T4, yeah. All these things had 24 channels on it. So yep. You would move the dish. And to skip a little bit further, in March of 92, I went to a house show in Anaheim, and the guy next to me, his name was Gary Skyberg, and he had this thing on him, and I was used to the After Mags at the time, but he had this other thing in his hand, and it didn't have pictures in it. And I'm like, hey, what's that? And he's all, oh, this is the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. Yeah. And I knew who Meltzer was because I remember every Wednesday there used to be a sports newspaper called The National, and Meltzer actually had a column in there.
Yeah.
So yeah. I used to buy The National just for Meltzer's thing, but in there they said what the Wrestling Observer was, but not how to get it.
Yeah.
I remember, like, at the time, the Hogan Hansen match was going on, and that's how I found out that was even happening, because it wasn't on WWF TV, and I don't remember the After Mags really going over it too much.
Yeah.
But he gave me the Observer, and I remember I was going through it, and I'm just like, here, it's not trying to insult my intelligence.
Yep,
and,
yep.
And I remember that night Meltzer's phone number was in there, and I'm 17, and, you know, looking back, my wife's is like, did you really call a grown man when you were, you know, underage? Yeah, that's what we did back then.
Yeah, I mean, discovering the Observer was something else, because it was like, it's like unlocking a locked door to a secret room, and it's just, it was so cool to,
you remember the reader's page in the
box? Yeah, oh yeah. It's funny now to look at how many people in that reader's page were, you know, regular writers and stuff that you encounter online and stuff over the years, you know, still.
Oh my God. Look at Dave Prazak was a normal.
I know, yeah.
Rob Naylor was a normal.
It's
go through that. It's crazy how many of those people at Barry Rose, many people nowadays are like very well known to the community, you know?
Yeah. It's great. And, but it was just like, I mean, at that time it was, through the 80s, but it was so cool because it was like, everybody talks now about how there's so many hours of wrestling on TV, right? But man, in the 80s, it was just, we had a variety though, but there were so many hours into, because I mean, like you said, I watched World Class, AWA, the local Bruiser show there in Indiana. Of course, all the WWF, NWA stuff. On the satellite's how I discovered Lucha Libre. Just panning through, finding, you know, the Spanish-speaking channel that I come across. I'm like, what the hell is this? And I'm like, what's with the masks and the, I remember the Triple A with the 8-sided ring, the octagon and all that. I'm like, it blew my mind. I thought, what in the hell is this?
I still remember first time I saw Lucha was like late 80s, and Kevin Von Erich and Kamala were there.
Yeah.
And that's how I knew them. So I kept on the channel, but then I learned about like Super Astro, Pirata Morgan, Satanico, Blue Panther, Hijo de Santo. I mean, that was life-changing. And growing up around L.A., I had Galavision there. So, I mean, I kind of knew it, but in the same sense, I didn't know it was like a weekly thing at 3 or 4 o'clock. I just would randomly flip through. But going back to the Meltzer thing, the crazy thing was that night I called him up. He actually picked up, and we started talking. And I told him, hey, I have a satellite dish in my backyard, and I live in – pretty near the Mexican border. He actually hooked me up with this guy, Dr. Lucha Steve Sims.
Yeah.
And Sims wrote Lucha Libre Weekly. And Sims told me where on the satellite dish that you could find CMLL and UWA. So if you see a lot of UWA on YouTube, like I am the one that was recording it at the time, a lot of that stuff, the stuff with like, Andre, Can-Am, the Crawfett and Furnace.
Yeah.
Bad News, like a lot of that stuff. I was recording it from March of 92 all the way until the TV show ended in November 92. But I mean, those are just like, now it's almost like there's too much wrestling out there, and you appreciate what you had back then. Like you would wait, you know, Some people would buy tapes from sellers, you know, our video being at the time the most known and popular at that time. And you would wait 6 weeks to get this tape. And when it would show up, you would just watch it over and over again and just appreciate it.
Yeah.
You know, like the Super J Cup showed up. And I just remember, I had a group of friends I'd watch tapes with. That Super Jacob showed up. I think we watched it like twice in the same night because of how blown away we were by it, you know?
Yeah.
But Meltzer, too, also in the Observer around that time, posted every Japanese wrestling video store in the United States, what city they were in, what their name was. And I had three by me, one in Anaheim, one in Costa Mesa, and one in Stanton. And I remember going to all three. And the one in Stanton, I remember the guy, I explained to him, hi, I'm pro wrestling. And he showed me and he was like going over each tape. And he actually learned a little Japanese by this way, puro resu, how to find it and stuff. And he would point this baba, this giant baba, this enoki, this strong style, this Onita, this death match, this the women. It was crazy. Like, yeah, I just fell in love at that point. It was like this secret society, like, you know, that nobody knew about, you know?
Yeah, it was. Like you said, it's so easy to find stuff now, right? With streaming services and YouTube.
Way too easy.
Yeah. And yeah, back then it was, I always was on the lookout, right? No matter where I went. And it's like when you stumbled across something, whether it be on TV or a magazine in a rack or whatever, you know, like going to flea markets and seeing guys selling old magazines, whatever. It was just like, it's like you had hit the, you know, found hidden treasure, because it's like I was always looking, but it was so hard to, you know, hard to find because it wasn't widely accepted.
Yeah.
And, I remember being in high school and I loved pro wrestling, but it's like, I didn't really tell a whole lot of people, you know, just my close friends. It was like, you didn't walk around with a Pro Wrestling Illustrated, you know, or a Observer, you know, announcing it, because it was a different, I don't know, whatever, a different perception. And
I did. And the crazy thing,
there you go.
The crazy thing is, even last night, I had a high school female friend that like posted on my wall because she saw a video of the story of Fry Tormenta, you know, the guy that Nacho Libre is based off of. And she posted it on my wall. Have I seen it 1,000 times? Yes. But I appreciate that, you know, these people that I originally went to high school with are, you know, they see that and they think of me first thing.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you're known, right, as the Lucha Libre guy. I mean, you're probably the most recognizable Lucha guy out there online and everything else. What was it about Lucha that hooked you so deeply?
Oh, man. So, September 92, there was, I always read about these shows in Los Angeles, like May of 92, the FMW actually came to Cal State Los Angeles. And I didn't know about it ahead of time, but like the main event was Atsushi Onita, Tarzan Goto, and Hijo de Santo against Negro Casas, Tim Patterson, and Horace Boulder, you know, Hogan's nephew.
Yeah.
And I didn't know about this until afterwards, but the crazy thing is the show sold out 5,600 people. And I always like wondered about these Cal State shows, and Cal State was like maybe 25 miles from me. So I started asking around. I didn't even have a car yet. I got my car like September, October of 92. But there was a guy named Steve Gerber, and he came over to my house. Like another thing too, here I am just turned 18, and here's this, you know, 30 something year old man driving over to take me to shows. My wife is like, this really happened? I'm like, yes, like we didn't think about that shit back then.
No.
Yeah. So my first ever show was September 19th, 1992. The main event was, of all people, Negro Casas, Kung Fu and Lover Boy against El Brazo, El Dandy, and Piloto Suicida. I may have one or two of the names off, but that pretty much was it. And I just remember, like, these fans were, like, really, really into it. Like, I've gone to hundreds of WWF shows. I'd been to WrestleMania 7. I'd gone to a lot of different shows. But these fans were just a different breed. It was just crazy, like, what I learned going to that show. And at this show, I met Dan Farron and Vandal Drummond for the first time. But I just got so hooked. I went to every show I could. They returned October 10th, 92, which was actually Vampiro's U.S. debut. And I was there. He returned 3 weeks later for a Halloween show. Went to everything there. But Cal State stopped running late November 92. But I started hearing about shows in Bell, shows in Carson, and later shows in Compton, of all places. And You know, had my car, drove to all these shows, and you know, there's this just community of people. And to skip ahead a little bit, it was crazy because, you know, AAA started May of 92. These big AAA stars that were on TV would sometimes show up at these little shows in Carson and Compton. I mean, Rey Mysterio Jr. was working Psychosis in front of 70 people on these shows in Compton, and they were doing the same stuff that they were doing on TV at Juan de la Barrera in front of 10,000 people in front of 70 people at this show in Compton. So it just, yeah, I always fell in love with it at the point, you know?
Yeah. Well, and, how many trips you made to Mexico for shows there? Well, I mean, several. I mean, right? I mean, I guess you don't.
It's got to be like I'm going to go in the last 4 years. Probably about 50.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you've hit them. Are there any arenas or towns in Mexico still on your bucket list that you haven't hit yet?
Oh, by far. Cause the thing is I'm concentrated mostly in Guadalajara. No, Mexico City, Monterrey, and Tijuana. So I usually stay in those three big cities. Those are the most populated and the ones with the biggest lucha following. However, I would still like to hit Guadalajara. CMLL runs, I think, every Monday night. They run Arena Guadalajara. Arena Coliseo de Guadalajara is the name of it. Mm-hmm. Arena Puebla as well. I went to Puebla to meet Darrell Dixon a couple Sundays ago. Uh-huh. But I didn't get to see a show when I was in town. But I'd love to see Arena Puebla. There's an Arena Nalcapan in Mexico City that I would love to go to. The one with all the old AAA shows back in the 90s, Juan de la Barrera Gimnasio. That one I'd really like to hit one day.
Well, it's such a different culture, like CMLL. Like, because they own their arenas, so it's so different.
Yes.
Than in the
US,
right?
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, the boys get paid based on how the house does, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So they get a percentage of the gate. I'm sure some guys, like, you know, when Jericho comes in next week, in 2 weeks, he's already kind of arranged something ahead of time.
Yeah.
Good. That was the whole reason why the Young Bucks never went down to Arena Mexico, was the pay. Apparently it was based off the gate and they wanted a guarantee, and they don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you mentioned earlier with, you know, the tapes and everything else, right? You've unearthed some wild finds here recently. Yes. In the last several years, primarily a lot of lucha shows. And like you said, you recorded a lot too, but you've taken it upon yourself, and it's such an important thing, right, to preserve and protect these shows, because there's not a lot of people focused in on the lucha stuff, like there are some of the American promotions or even Japanese promotions for that matter. So you're kind of the guy that's kind of taking this on, you know, to help preserve. And the cool thing is you're putting a lot of it out there on YouTube for the, you know, people to see.
Yeah. So a lot of my trips to Monterey, when I'm down there, I have a connection that he started making a lot of YouTube comments in Spanish. And I kind of realized, you know, you can always tell when someone it seems a little more knowledgeable than just posting, you know, the normal, like they like this person, they don't like this person. We connected on Facebook when I went down to Monterey in October 2020 to go meet Cien Caras. He spent the whole day with me and stuff like that. And he ended up making copies of his entire collection for me on DVD. I got home, put it in, and it was like, God damn, this is gold. This is not out there.
Yeah.
So I put a lot of that up. I think last June, I flew down to Monterey to go see a friend of mine. And I met up with that same friend who gave me, and in fact, I'm looking at the pile right now, about 14 VHS tapes and about 40 discs that he had compiled. But when I was in Monterey as well, there was this guy that he saw on Facebook that I posted. I was at Arena Mezquitil in Monterey, And he mentioned that he had a trunk full of VHS tapes. And I'm like, this can't be, this is too good to be true. So my friend and I, when we got to the building, well, we were at the building, he hit me up. We went out to his car and lo and behold, he had like literally like 150, 200 VHS tapes in his trunk. We worked out a deal for about, I want to say 40 pesos. So about $2 a tape, and ended up, you know, getting everything. And the stuff I couldn't fit in my suitcase, my friend Daniel mailed to me. But a lot of this stuff was like ultra rare. There was a thing on there called Ultra Royo, which was an old TV show that aired from like 2004 to 2007. And on there was the one time AAA and WWE did a joint promotion on a show. And it was like Pirata Morgan did an opening on it. And then Ray Jr. came out and did an angle with Eminem, Melina Morrison and Nitro.
Yeah.
And this is all in Mexico, by the way. And it was considered lost media. And it was on one of these tapes. I put it up and within like a week, it had like 100,000 views. And all the comments were like, you realize this is lost media.
Yeah.
So yeah,
It's such an amazing focus. I do that, right? You know, I trade for a lot of tapes, buy a lot of tapes, discs, whatever. And I focus in a lot on Midway, like Bruiser stuff. WWE, I'm a WWE guy. And a lot of times I'll get, you know, all these discs and tapes and I'll watch through. I'm like, I got that episode. But then when you come across that one, it's like, oh, I don't have this episode. I've not seen this. That feeling, there's nothing like that in the world. Yeah. It's unreal.
Yeah.
And yeah. you're doing that, getting that feeling by the trunk loads. So that's unbelievable.
Yeah. But right before the pandemic, I was at Cauliflower Alley and I ran across Mike Tenay, and I hadn't seen Tenay in ages since the old AAA shows. You know, I hadn't seen him like since he got the job with WCW, and I went up to him and I started talking to him, and I'm like, I don't know if you remember me, sir. And he's all, Roy Lusher, I know it's you, shut up. And we started talking for a while. He wanted my phone number, and then he called me up a week later and he's like, listen, I see what you do on YouTube. Do you want my collection? As long as you pay for it. Do you want it? I'm like, absolutely. So we agreed little by little to get his tapes over to me, started getting everything. There was so much stuff on here, the Lucha especially. I mean, all the stuff he recorded as far as like WCW, it basically the network, the company already owns it. It's out there.
Yeah.
But the Lucha stuff, what he was doing was he was recording XEQ on the weekends, which it's a feed. A channel that they would show different matches than what was being shown on Galavision. So there was like some new stuff that was on these tapes that was just like mind blowing to me. Like, I can't believe this is out there.
Yeah. And
so that really helped as well, was, you know, coming into Tenay's collection.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and not only the tape stuff, but you're also a collector of memorabilia, particularly Lucha action figures. And when I was a kid, I had some of the CMLL, the San Francisco Toy Maker, those rubber figures, right? Because some of those, you know, pilfered their way into the U.S. A little more. And I thought
I'd still love to know more. You know what? I would love to know exactly how that happened.
I mean, me too.
Yeah, I was talking to Corey Graves a few years ago, and he was like, I remember going to a pharmacy at a little store in Pittsburgh. And they had Pia Roth and Ryo de Jalisco and Vampiro figures.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
How did the reach on that is just like, you how did this deal ever happen?
Yeah.
You
know? I don't know. I found them in Indiana. I mean, I had several of them. And, you know, mixed in with, you know, my LJNs and different, you know, all those different figures in my collection at that time. And it was wild finding them, because that's what I thought. I thought, because at first glance when I saw them, I thought, oh, what are these? Some kind of knockoff figures. You know, you're like, whoa, wait a minute. What is this? And it's the same thing. It's like, how in the world is this showing up in Podunk, Indiana? And I don't know. I don't know. It's so odd. But you've unearthed, you know, some rare stuff, and you talk about, you got a lot of your stuff signed. One of a kind things. I mean, you've unearthed some things that were thought to actually not believe, you know, wasn't there a ring that you thought didn't actually exist, and you end up finding one? And
The AAA Kellyanne ring, So we saw photos of the Kellyanne ring on wrestlingfigs.com, and a lot of people, and including myself originally, were like, this seems Photoshopped. This doesn't seem real and stuff like that. Uh-huh. 2020, I got a really, really close friend named Miguel, who every time I go to Mexico nowadays, 90% of the time he flies in. If it's not Mexico City, he'll fly to TJ or Monterey and hang out with me and stuff like that. He was searching Marketplace down in Mexico City, and someone posted a photo of like a bunch of items. One of the items was the AAA Kellyanne ring. And like this guy had no clue what he had. And my friend Miguel went over, discussed it with him, and actually got the ring for him from him. Uh-huh. And it's a WWF King of the Ring, Hasbro King of the Ring. And if you read the writing on the outside, a bunch of them were shipped to Monterey and were changed from WWF King of the Rings over to AAA Kellyanne rings, the stickers and all that stuff. It's mind blowing.
That's wild. It's wild to me how stuff like that keeps unearthing. Because, I mean, like with Matt Cardona and stuff, unearthing like prototypes and different things that there's always stuff turning up all these years. I mean, we're talking some of it decades later. And it's like, it's still wild to me that, I mean, it's why you keep searching, because you never know what's still out there. And
all my Marketplace searches are based in Mexico. As it is right now, like there is a set of figures from 2006 that CMLL released. It's crazy. The CMLL, basically because of the bootleggers outside of Arena Mexico, the owner Paco Alonso and the Luderoth family really didn't want to make anything official because they didn't want to mess with the vendors outside. That was like the figures were Antonio Pena idea.
Yeah.
And then Pena creates AAA. If you look on the back of the CMLL figures, you'll see there's other figures listed that never came out. Like El Brazo, Brazo de Plata, Pirata Morgan. And that's because Pena created AAA and they just decided they weren't going to make it. But in 2006, CMLL made a second line of figures and they did three lines, 2006, 2007, 2008. The 2006 figures, actually, there were 10 made and each one came with a DVD inside of it.
Wow.
And even 2 days ago, I was doing a search and I came into one of the ones with the DVD that I didn't have before. And I'm going back and forth with the guy right now trying to get it. It's mind-blowing how, you know, 20-something years later, 30-something years later, something that, you know, you've never seen pops up and, you know, you got to have it no matter the cost.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then on top of that, once you get the item, it's like, hey, how do I get this thing signed? When I went to Mexico City 2 weekends ago for Triple Mania, I brought along my Rey Bucanero figures because he hasn't been to America in a minute, and I needed him to sign some stuff. He ended up meeting me at a Chevrolet dealership outside of Mexico City to sign my figures.
Oh, that's funny. but you know what? That's part of Lucha in Mexico too, though, right? Because shows will. The smaller promotions, the more independent, they run shows like everywhere, right? Just in parking lots. I mean,
I've seen normal Friday or Saturday in Mexico, there'll be an average of 25 shows in one day.
Yeah. And they're just like all over. And it's just such a part of the culture. It's so different. Part of the culture of the society. And that's one of the coolest things about Lucha. It's just, it's almost like the national sport, almost the national past. It's just so ingrained as just part of Mexico that it's beautiful. We've talked about how many events you've gone to and everything else, but there's a couple of super important events that I think we got a key on, right? And one was the AAA, the pay-per-view in 94, the When Worlds Collide in LA. When
Worlds Collide, yep.
Yeah. You were there. You had some handheld footage that you took and things. For you as a fan, how important was this event for you?
You know, the crazy thing about that show was, obviously I'd been to a lot of the AAA shows in LA before that. And just that crowd is crazy. And You've seen footage of before where Eddie Guerrero and Art Barr and Jake are just getting pelted with Pepsis and diapers and stuff like that. Yeah. Well, I obviously, being an observer reader, I knew this was going to be aired live through WCW on TV in America. The problem was that they changed up the show and the Mexican fans didn't appreciate it. Like, obviously, they I don't say they didn't appreciate it, but it's unwanted changes that the fans hated.
Yeah.
So if you watch the show, you'll notice there's no the known ring musics. Like, Blue Panther would come out to La Puerta Negra. Ray would come out to Little Respect by Erasure. All that was taken away. La Parca with Thriller. I remember the fans around me that night, no matter what was happening as far as in the ring. Oh, one thing too about in the ring, besides the tag match, the hair versus mask match, everything was knocked down to one fall. And the show lasted only about 2 hours. The fans around me, I remember talking to them as we're leaving, and they're like, fucking Americans, they change everything. That's no good anymore. They hated it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, well,
and not wrong.
Yeah, they really were pissed off about how things changed, and the building never recovered. If you look at the attendance for the next two shows, there was the July 15th, 95 show. I remember that because it was my 21st birthday. And then there was the Star of Death show in December 8th, 95. The attendance like dropped below 10 grand on both of them. And a lot of the fans were really believing. I mean, they may have not shown live on pay-per-view, but a lot of those Mexican fans thought the American company had taken over and that the shows weren't going to be the same ever again.
Yeah. Yeah. And was this the event with you and your famous sign, the El Rudo? Was that and when Worlds Collide? What event was that?
So I didn't get to go to the first show because I was the typical Lucha fan that thought you could just buy your ticket at the gate. This is the first show, August 28th, 93, the one with the Jake Ciancaras Conan three-way match.
Yeah.
So I was in the parking lot and they said tickets sold out, couldn't get in. So I bought my ticket ahead of time for the next show, which was November 12th, 93. This was the famous show where Meltzer was there in the crowd. And before the show began, I held up my 100% Rudo sign the fans, they were not having it. They started throwing like chili dogs, mustard fries, all that beer, piss, like all this shit at me. Luckily, there was a laundromat across the street from the sports arena. I was able to clean up before I went home. Some guy felt so bad for me. He's like, throw your clothes in, just stand in the bathroom. I'll let you know when it's done.
No. Yeah. I mean, that for a long time, you were, I mean, that's what you were known, that sign. I remember that's what 100% Rudo.
Not anymore. Here I am, you know, 2 weeks ago in Jeff Jarrett's face chanting Mexico, Mexico, and, you know, Karen Jarrett spitting on me for doing it. But the 100% Rudo sign was the November 93 show. I bring this sign back? I don't remember if I brought the sign back for any future sports arena shows. I did for the smaller shows in Compton and Bell and those places and stuff.
Yeah.
But the handheld footage you're talking about from the When Worlds Collide show. Yeah. I had a buddy's Liger mask. I put that on and I think it's the Free OJ was the sign that I had to get a laugh out of the crowd because remember a month or two before that was the car chase.
Yeah. And you were also at, I think it was in 96, the World Peace Festival. Which was talent from, I mean, WCW, AAA, New Japan, CML, so many others. Man, this was a special event. What was it like to be there that?
Probably my favorite show of all time, and there was really no standout matches, to be honest with you. It was just, there was such a vibe about that. Inoki, I went to the press conference 5 months before that show happened.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, Inoki was there. I brought like a whole bunch of stuff for, you know, him to sign, and he graciously signed everything. I saw the whole ton of, like about five or six magazines that Inoki signed here. And And yeah, just after, so I at the press conference, I was asking all these like specific questions about Lucha and Japan. Will Baba's team be here and stuff like that? And his piece, so I thought Baba might be there. But one of his people reached out to me after the show, and they actually had me help do press with local media in order to publicize the Peace Festival, because they knew fans only really knew the WCW guys. So, but here I am knowing about Sasuke, Liger, the Lucha guys, stuff like that. So I helped this guy, James Boone, the Shadow Man. He had a show called Squared Circle Radio. That was a national cable radio show out of Sun City or Sun Valley or something like that. And I did a show for 3 weeks leading up to the Peace Festival to try to help ticket sales and just talk about the Peace Festival the whole time.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, the show, there were 7,600 people in there, but they were papering the hell out of that show the week leading up to it. Like 3,000 or 4,000 tickets were comped. I'm sure it was a money loss, but you know, for just that the atmosphere that night was amazing. Just seeing one by one, Sasuke versus Liger, Casas versus Santo, Inoki's. I think that was his like third to last match too. It was crazy to see.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I want to ask you, because I know I've heard from people and seen online a lot of fans, wrestling fans, they're often a little intimidated to try to dive into Lucha or Puro because they don't know where to start, right? Or how to watch or where to learn. Because it's so different, right? That's, I mean, it's hard to know.
The language barrier too. Like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, it's hard to know where do you start? What with you being so ingrained in all this, what would you suggest for someone who has an interest in exploring these styles of wrestling a little bit?
So I would ask, like, if you're a fan back during the Monday Night War days, which one were you more a fan of? WWF? Were you more a fan of Monday Night Raw? Were you a fan of Nitro? If your answer is Nitro, I'm going to kind of lead you more towards CMLL because they have a more traditional style. Mm-hmm. CMLL nowadays still does the traditional 2 out of 3 fall matches. Like, is that something? AAA got rid of 2 out of 3 falls in 2001. So I would suggest old school, you'd watch CMLL. If you're kind of more new school and, you know, I like the glitz and the glamour and shit like that, I would check AAA out and go from there. CMLL, basically, they do have a YouTube channel and they do put some stuff up, but they also have a paid YouTube channel where they basically put everything up. I think it's 10 or 15 bucks a month, and they put up almost every Friday show at Arena Mexico, Sunday show at Arena Mexico, and I think Tuesday at Arena Coliseo de Guadalajara. AAA, the TV, it's kind of the frustrating thing is their TV is, you either have to go to Cubs Twitch channel or whatever link that the Cubs fan Lucha blog post when AAA TV goes up on Space in Mexico. But it's hard to watch, to find. And that's probably one of my biggest complaints about AAA is it just needs to be a weekly way to watch it on a regular basis to really get into it, other than the 3 Triple Manias a year that are up on the Fight TV or Thriller or whatever it's called now.
Yeah.
But AAA also does put some of their shows up on YouTube, some of their TV stuff, some of their big shows. So it's almost like the companies themselves are their worst enemy when it comes to how to watch it, because it's so inaccessible. I hope by the end of this year, beginning of next year, I do know some big things are on the horizon for AAA, and I'm hoping with those big things on the way that leads to either a TV deal or a way for some people in America to watch TV again, because you and I remember this in the 90s, there was Televisa or Galavision, and they would do a half block of AAA and then a half block of CMLL.
All
the same channel.
Yeah. Now, CMLL is very, very scheduled. They have the certain towns, certain nights every week.
Yeah.
It's very set. Yeah, AAA is more the, you know, kind of the almost the American style schedule. I mean, they, you know, they schedule
the touring shows. It's like a touring circus.
Yeah. But you're right. Now, wasn't AAA the one that had all the issues with YouTube there for a while? With, like, it's like,
yeah,
Something was copyright in Mexico and UA. What was it? It was something going on with their YouTube there for a bit.
Yeah, I think it was 2019 or 20. Basically, they were in partnership with someone who was involved with Lucha Underground, and they took a loan from that person. And I think there was a promise made or something along the lines of there won't be an expansion into an America unless it involved you. I believe there was a show that happened and the guy filed a lawsuit against AAA. A show happened maybe in New York or something like that. And he wasn't involved and he filed a lawsuit against AAA. And that's why basically everything was geo-blocked to Mexico from the AAA YouTube channel, which it screwed up a lot, you know, for the company at that point. I know I'm probably getting a few of the details wrong. Yeah. That's just kind of what I remember from that time frame. I believe stuff has been worked out since, but just it's never recovered.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I would highly advise any modern fans that have any passing interest to try to dive in and just whatever, just jump in. Because there's so much Lucha, and Puro for that matter, that have infused the American style and kind of melded in. That I really think if you know, if you're a fan of modern style wrestling and the, you know, everything else, I really think that, you know, now more than ever, those fans would enjoy Lucha. It would be, you know, when I first discovered it, it felt so different. It was such a different style, but you know, I think now it'd be, you know, while there's differences, I think it's a little more familiar because so much of that has infused into the American style and a lot of the current talent.
But that's another thing you bring up too is isn't it crazy back in the day, like even certain dives and certain moves were associated with one specific wrestler.
Yeah.
And now it's just like, hey, let's steal what we can from this person. Yeah. You know? I mean, remember back in the day, Great Sasuke was literally the only one who did the Sasuke special.
Yeah.
Now, what was it? I heard, who was it that I was listening to Chris Van Vliet, and she got her job with the company by doing a perfect Sasuke special in a match. And it was just like, wait, it's like, you know, just, you remember back in the day, you hear stories of like, even, I guess, Billy Kidman confronting Brock Lesnar backstage at WrestleMania for doing the shooting star because that's his move.
Yeah. You know? Well, I remember, you know, even Scott Steiner doing the Frankensteiner and everything else. And people make it, oh, look what he made. I'm like, come on, guys. this is not a new thing.
remember on Nitro, I think it was one of the Lucha guys, like Scott Steiner was on commentary, one of the Lucha guys did a hurricane run off the top rope. Scott's all, stop it, that's a Frankensteiner.
Yeah. Oh, it's funny. And it's just exposure, right? I mean, that's what it's always been. But when I remember first watching Lucha, I thought, what are these guys? These guys are going to kill themselves. What are they doing? Nobody, you know, how did they do that? It was so strikingly different than the American style at that time. With a few exceptions, right? I mean, what you call a high flyer in America was nothing compared to...
Remember the Observer Award, like best high flyer went to Jimmy Snuka for 3 years straight.
Yeah.
And what the hell high flying did he have? He did the splash on the top row.
I know, yeah. And it's, you know, and I love, you know, I love guy, you know, Bobby Eaton, whatever else, but they always called him a high flyer because he did the leg drop and this and that. And I'm like, oh man, that's, I don't know that that's it's so much high flying. I mean, it's wild. It was so different. But like I said,
mind-blowing thing to me is the greatest Lucha matches that I can name off the top of my head right now that I've attended live were with people that no one would consider a high flyer. Like, there's an emotion, there's a feel. Like, for example, 2.5 years ago, I was in Monterey for the Triple Mania. AAA announced the 3 Triple Mania shows. So it was a 8-man masked tournament where the loser advances. And the first round in Monterey, one of the matches was Viano 4 against L.A. Park, who was La Park in WCW. And Monterey is L.A. Park's hometown. Obviously, there's no high flying involved in that match. Viano's in his 60s. LA Park is approaching 60.
Yeah.
But that is the best live match I've probably seen in the last 10, 15 years. And like, just there is sometimes an emotion to Lucha. And it's a little frustrating when you hear some of the old timers, even at Cauliflower Alley, saying, oh, that's just a flippity grasshopper jumping around and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, no. Like, there is a feel to Lucha that it, you know, not even dive related, that, you know, just really you have to, you know, be a part of the culture to understand.
Yeah. And it's hard also, I mean, to grasp the importance of the hair matches, the mask matches, and what those mean to Lucha and the culture. Because, you know, like in Memphis, you know, they had the stretch of Lawler and Dundee and everybody was getting their hair cut and stuff. But when they build that in Lucha, it's special. It's important.
Yes.
It's their identity. And
You know, like Wagner and Psycho Clown. The biggest mask match in the last decade or so.
Yeah.
And just there was a feel going into it because you just never thought Wagner was going to lose his mask. And, you know, that's what elevated Psycho Clown to the spot he's in now. It's not even so much like they how heated the feuds get, but if someone is not as well known, like when Sam Adonis beat Blue Panther for his hair, that elevated Sam to the next level as well.
Yeah.
For him personally. And it's crazy because those mass matches, how you can't even put into words how big some of those are. Like there's just a feel to them. God, Love Machine, Blue Panther, and even like Vampiro and Pirata Morgan in 92 when they had their hair match. It was just anyone out there listening, you get a chance, check out that Pirata Vampiro. That was really early in Vampiro's career, and that just really elevated him to that next level, and that was such a bloodbath and such emotion with that match.
Yeah, and oftentimes the mask is not only that, but it's generational, right? It's passed down, not, you know, maybe among family or among trainer and student. You know, a lot of times that identity, that character, that mask, it's such an honor. It's such a you know, an identity. It's often passed down from one to the next. And it's you know, it's just, it's truly, it's an honor. It's a special, there's nothing like it in American wrestling. Honestly, there's not really a parallel.
So that same tournament I was just talking about, when they did the Tijuana building, the next Triple Mania, there was a match on there, and it was Viano 4 against Psycho Clown. And remember, the Vianos were the one that beat Psycho Clown's dad, Brazo de Plata, Los Brazos, for their masks.
Yep.
So, yeah, this, everyone in the building knew the history between the Vianos and the Brazos, and they were seeing a generational thing going on in that match as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's nothing. I can't think of anything like that in America.
No, me neither. No. Well, I mean, let's wind down a little bit. Let's talk. You have this amazing collection, right? You've traveled to Mexico countless times. You've attended these historic events. I mean, you've served in the past for Cauliflower Alley Club. You've hosted podcasts. You've met so many of your heroes and stuff. What's next on Roy's bucket list that you just must do? Does anything jump?
My next big thing is WrestleMania next year. I really have nothing planned for a minute. Probably just work and save up for a little bit, and then, you know, WrestleMania next year. After that, Cauliflower Alley next year. The thing with Cauliflower Alley, by the way, is I'm very passionate, and I appreciate all the work that Cauliflower Alley Club does for, you know, the wrestlers and their families and stuff like that. In 2018, the hell's the guy's name? I could picture him in my head. Carmine DeSpirito. So he worked with Blue Demon Jr. and Cauliflower Alley Club, and they created the first ever Lucha Libre Award and had Blue Demon Jr. as the first award winner. Fast forward 2 years later, and CAC is about to give somebody a Lucha Libre Award, and Brian Blair called me up, and I'm really close to Brian. We talk at least once a week. He, you know, runs things by me just to get my opinion as a fan and see what I would think. When he told me this certain person was going to get the Lucha Award, I let him know, listen, that may not be the right move for a couple of reasons. The person really isn't a luchador per se. I said, let me make a phone call. How about Rey Mysterio Jr. get the award? He said, we're not going to say no to that. So reached out, lo and behold, Ray, who had just moved to Vegas the month before, agreed to the award. And every year since then, Brian's really given me the ball to run with and say who deserves the Lucha Award this year. 2021 or 2022, it was Conan. 2023, it was Damian 666. Oh. And then this year, it was Negro Casas. Yeah. We've already you know, in my head, I've already gotten to who's going to get the award next year. I hope the people are happy, and I hope the award winner is happy as well. But above the award itself, the thing with Cauliflower Alley is it's not really known in Mexico what they do. They help people with their rent, their medical bills. You just have to show proof of this. So I've kind of, there's been a few luchadors in need, and I've been the middleman to help them fill out the benevolent forms with CAC and to help them with their medical bills with their situation. So to me, that's even more rewarding than the event itself, is knowing that I've helped some of the luchadors along the way that are in need.
You brought up Conan. We didn't even bring up Conan. How big, dude, how big that guy was. I mean,
oh my God.
The Hulk Hogan of Mexico. I mean,
I can't even put into words how huge Conan was in the mid 90s. AAA was built around Conan.
Yeah.
And that was such an amazing time when AAA first started. You had pretty much half of the CMLL roster jumping over, and everything was built around Conan, Paraguayo, Hijo de Santo, Octagon, Oscar, Sagrada being the, you know, the big five. And then on the Rudo side, you had Los Hermanos Dinamita. Without the Dinamita, AAA would not have survived, by the way. They were the meat and bones of that promotion. You can't go into, you know, like the early the Ward of the Rock and Wrestling Connection, you can't have a Hulk Hogan without a Roddy Piper, and Los Hermanos Dinamita were the Roddy Piper. I mean, they did everything, the promos, the in ring, the work. It was just amazing what they did.
Yeah,
but Conan himself, I mean, the CMLL never would have done this, by the way. But AAA did the crossover where Conan was doing the soap operas.
Yeah, yeah.
Mi Abuelo de Yo, he did the rap
music
album.
Yeah, music. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's so many people know Conan from his WCW days, and I'm not knocking that, because I mean, I think he had a good career there too. But that's not even close to what Conan's career. I mean, I remember when that picture came out of Conan and Hogan, and there was all that tease of those two, you know, facing off or whatever. And I'm like, dude, that's, American fans may not grasp, but if you put that thing in, like, you know, Mexico, that's huge.
Yeah, that was the John Arezzi belt, the
International
Wrestling All-Stars heavyweight title.
Yeah.
From what I understand, there was a plan for three matches, one in America, one in Mexico, and then undecided where the third would be. And Conan told me that Kevin Sullivan, I guess, nixed it. He had a match with One Man Gang where he won the U.S. title, and I guess they didn't believe, or I guess they don't think that Conan was ready to have a match with Hogan yet. It just was never revisited. But yeah, no, that was supposed to happen, and sadly, you know, it didn't. You know, that would have been great. That really would have been great. And remember, Hogan has experience in Lucha. He did two shows there, one in 83. It was, I think, Paraguayo and Canek against him and Gran Hamada.
Yeah.
And then he actually defended the WWF title against Canek at El Torreo in September of 84.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he had history there in Mexico, so he'd been there before.
Yeah.
When I met Hogan October 2022, I actually asked him about it, and he told me, other than it was Inoki and not Vince that got him those bookings, like, he really didn't remember too much about those shows.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not a huge Hogan fan, but a lot of people that miss out on some of his better stuff by looking elsewhere. Like, I mean, his stuff in Japan. I mean, that match he had with Muda and stuff like that. I mean, it's a different Hogan. He worked a different style.
Yeah, that's the thing is why, and this is something to be learned with the newer wrestlers nowadays. And I get it. You have to get over first to that level before you can slow your roll. And instead of 1,000 moves, just do 50 or five. But, you know, you look at early Cena, same thing with Cena. He, you know, before the five moves of doom, Cena, he was doing a lot of stuff, you know, like Japan Hogan did.
Yep.
But yeah, it was just a completely different Hogan. I mean, look at his match with Hansen. His stuff with New Japan when he fought Inoki, the IWGP final in 83.
Mm-hmm.
just it's not the same Hogan that American fans would know. You watch him against One Man Gang in, you know, Boston Garden in 86, and it's like, you know, maybe 5-6 moves total, eye rake, back rake, you know, body slam, stuff like that. But it's this is what's going to get pops from the crowd. He knows how to work a crowd.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's kind of to me, that's kind of the loss. No matter the style you work, whatever else, it's that connection in the crowd that's oftentimes, you know, the focus is off a little. But, you know, that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah.
Well, let's, Roy, let's wrap this up. Like you said, we've talked about your presence online, your YouTube, or whatever else. What's the best way for people to follow you online and keep up what you're doing and check out your YouTube channels?
100%, it would be my Twitter at my name, Roy Lucier, R-O-Y-L-U-C-I-E-R. I'm actually going to pull up. I have a website, royswrestlingvault.com. Mm. I put my videos, my YouTube channels up on there. Let's see if my YouTube channels I have. So years ago, I used to put every video up on one channel. The problem with that is one promotion would get a wild hair up their ass, strike a bunch of videos, and the entire channel went down.
Yep.
So what I now do is I put up my videos based on what promotion. So I have Roy Lucier All Japan, Roy Lucier UWA, Roy Lucier CMLL, Roy Lucier AAA, Roy Lucier Houston, Roy Lucier Olympic, Roy Lucier WWWF Wrestling, Roy Lucier Wrestling Territories, Roy Lucier All Japan Women, Roy Lucier Japan Random. And I don't put any New Japan up. They're literally the worst ones. Mm-hmm. I've got a great relationship with the WWE. They've made it clear to me, as long as it's not on the network, feel free to put it up. So I do what I can as far as that. But those are the YouTube channels that I have, and everything is up in playlists. So you want to see everything from All Japan from 1985, it's up there in a playlist, all in chronological order.
Yeah. And so on and so forth. And all that can be accessed and linked off of your site. Is that correct?
100%.
Yeah. So what's that again? Roy, what was it again?
Roy'sWrestlingVault.com.
Okay. I'll throw that link in the show notes, but if everybody goes there, that's a good way to start. You can link off to all those different channels. Check out Roy on X, formerly known as Twitter, of course. I still call it Twitter, but, you know, it's check him out there, give him a follow there. You know, he posts a lot of stuff there, a lot of history related stuff there too, as well. So good stuff, Roy. You're a definite, you'll follow. And one of the best things about you, Roy, I love your positivity and your passion. It's really infectious, and it's just really fun. I've posted a couple of different times that, man, when I grow up, I want to be you, Roy. it's like you've never lost touch with what made us love wrestling, and that passion and that fun and that energy.
I'll go to some shows nowadays, and afterwards, I'll get inboxes from people like, God, that show sucked. And I was like, you weren't there live. That show was awesome. What are you talking about? And
everybody, you know, and they seem to look for something to complain about instead of trying to pull out the positives and just having fun and enjoying the moments. And
what was it like? I'm one of the co-hosts on, I do the Lucha segment on Conan's podcast that he does with Disco Inferno.
Yep.
And I did the Lucha segment last week, and we reviewed Triple Mania, which it didn't get the greatest reviews online, but they're live. It was fucking great. I loved it and stuff like that. And at the end of it, Conan, we're doing the review, and Conan's all, you didn't find anything wrong with the show? No, I loved it. Like, what would you like? I said, you know, the main event had a bunch of people that were approaching 50 or 60, and the work rate wasn't like smooth, but I'm not complaining about it because, you know, they've been wrestling for so long. They've earned that spot. But no, I find a lot to love in the shows that I go to. I don't feel the need to be negative or complain about it and stuff.
Yeah. Me neither. And that's always one of them. I mean, if you hate something so much that you just can't find anything, then just don't watch it. Watch something else. Something different.
Yeah. You'll notice, like, I'm very choosy and picky what I talk about online. And, you know,
me too.
I've watched some TV shows, and the work to me, I'm like, oh, it's a little dangerous. Oh, it's a little whatever. I'm not going to post about it or complain about it. I don't want to feed into this negative aura and vibe that so much have. You got these, I give Cornette and Disco, and I'm sure there's a couple other ones that pass because they've come from a worker standpoint and they really want a safer environment. Mm-hmm. Those people literally, they have the best, but I don't listen to Cornette. I Brian Lass is a great friend of mine, but I don't listen to Cornette because I'm not into the negative aspect of the business. But if I got a big problem or a huge issue or whatever, I just don't post about it. And I'm not trying to feed into that negativity. You know, I've got friends in all promotions, you know, if something's extremely wrong or whatever, like, why continue to feed into it and, you know, be one of 10 million voices that day, you know, it's just,
And I think people have lost track to wrestling. I know it's always been there's always been TV, wrestling TV, but we used to, the wrestling TV was meant to drive people to the live events. And I think people lost touch of that. The live events are that's the heart and soul. That's what people need to do. Get out there to the live events because you don't notice some of that as much. You're just caught up in the energy and the feel and being there. And it's a lot of fun, right? You're surrounded by people with like minds. And so, you know, I challenge anybody if they have trouble with the TV, or they just get out there to some live events, right? There's a lot of really great, strong, independent promotions nowadays that's out there to watch, and just get out there
Hey, and you know what just went up that a lot of people are going to be like, oh, God. But you know what I'm looking forward to watching right now? That Dory Funk match just got put up.
Yeah, man. What is everybody's putting that down so far. And I'm like, dude, I challenge anybody when they're 80 something to get out there and try to do that. And they're missing the point. How historic is this? How many decades has this guy done? And he's now the oldest, whatever, the oldest guy to ever have an active match. Don't get caught up in everything else and miss the history of the moment. And
you realize I go to Lucha shows where Kinect still wrestles and stuff like that. And I know his work rate isn't the best, but you know what they do to make up for it is when they do punch or kick or do a move, it's oversold like they were blown with a shotgun.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure Onita, who's, you know, been doing this a while and has nothing but absolute love for the Funk family, you know, I'm looking forward to what the reaction is here and this stuff, you know. Yeah. And for those who wonder what I'm talking about, they're Dory Funk and Osamu Nishimura versus Atsushi Onita. And please forgive me, I don't remember his partner's name. The barbed wire exploding match just got put up online. So I get off of here and this is what I'm watching.
Yeah. I remember when that was building up, Dory's wife, Barty, I messaged her and said, hey, man, send my love to Dory. Man, this is pretty cool. It's pretty historic. I mean, I'm mad respect. I'm like, you know, and I know Dory doesn't give two shits what people say on the internet, but
you want to know how positive a person I am is I actually get along great with Marty Funk.
Yeah, that's, I've never had any problem either, but I haven't had the interactions, but yeah, there's a lot of people have probably, you know, it is what it is, but it's,
I get Marty is looking to protect Dory.
Yeah.
I get it. Absolutely get it. Sure. If my mental health was not as sharp as it was a few years ago, and I get where she's coming from. Is it a little overboard? Yeah, sometimes, but you know, it's she's just trying to protect her husband. But
that's right. It's a different level, right? It's not just a wrestler to her. It's her husband.
Yeah, it's not a wrestler. This is her husband. So no, I absolutely get where she's coming from.
Me too. Stuff, yeah, me you know? Too. Well, Roy, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. I think you and I could just chat for hours about anything and everything. And we'll have to do it again sometime in the future, and maybe pick something, you know, Lucha Deep Dive or something to really dive into, and something more specific. But
if any of your viewers like have a specific topic, luchador, time frame, promotion that you want me to deep dive into, I'll do a Conrad style here and make notes, and you know, we can review that for an hour or two.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm all about, like I said, people are intimidated to try to watch, and so if maybe someday we can do a little something to deep dive and explore something in particular to help educate a little bit And whatever else. So
and remember one thing too, the people out there, people tell you to watch a specific match. It's going to be hard because you don't know that buildup going into it. Like, yep. For example, why was Eddie Guerrero or a Love Machine versus Ilha Santo Octagon the greatest live match I've ever seen? Because I knew the buildup 3 years into that. I knew about the Love Machine Blue Panther feud. I knew about the jumping. I knew about Eddie and Santo and their family and the feud that they had and stuff like that. You go into a match, don't just watch a match blind. Learn a little bit about it before you watch it, and that really helps.
It is so easy to find the information nowadays, just to go on and just do, you know, to dig a little deeper and read a little bit. And it, I mean, so easy nowadays to find that information. So we talked earlier how we said it's too easy to find this stuff, but sometimes that's a positive, right? There, where you can, you know, sometimes when people do the work and put it out there, it helps. But all right, Roy, well, I'm gonna let you go so that you can go watch an exploding barbed wire death match.
Exactly.
And have a good time with that. And like I said, we'll touch base and have you back on because this has been a lot of fun. And I think there's so much more that we could talk about. And I appreciate your time, Roy.
All right. I appreciate you, man. Thank you for all the work that you do online, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. So.
Hey, everybody. Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling. And right now, we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews. Sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
Hey, it's Bob Smith, and guess what? The Outdated Wrestling Hour is now part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. But hey, no fear, you're still going to hear the unique guests, comedy, music, authors, journalists, funny people. Who knows who's going to end up on the Outdated Wrestling Hour? Remember, it's all new and all old. So check it out in the WrestleCopia Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts. Listen if you know what's good for you.
All right, and welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. Special thanks to Roy for coming on and doing that show. So much fun to talk with him. So much fun to talk Lucha Libre, action figures, tape trading, just everything else. And I could talk for hours upon hours with Roy, and I fully intend to have him back on in the future to talk more, because again, that was a great, great conversation. Like I said earlier, guys, the best way to follow me is to go to X and look me up. I'm at The Dave Dynasty. While you're out in the internet world, please go check out all of the WrestleCopia network of podcasts. You can search for them on your favorite podcast platform or go to WrestleCopia.com. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. You can go to ClassicWrestling.net or you can download the Ultimate Classic Wrestling app on all of your devices. Now, next week, my guest here on the podcast is Angel Medina. We talk ECW, the Baldies, Dutch Mantel. Wait till you hear that one. And much, much more. Thank you to all the listeners and supporters for all your follows, your interactions, your downloads, everything else. It is truly, truly appreciated. So until next episode, guys. Wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.